What is up, everyone? This is Fireside Yankees. I'm your host, Ryan Garcia, joined by Alex Wilson. Alex, unfortunately, had to witness a disaster on Sunday once again for the Giants. They blow leads like... I can't really come up with a good joke there because that's a pretty
like
bad
Monica coincidence.
it's a bad setup for a joke. I was like, I said it out loud and I was like, oh man, there are not a lot of good directions to take this one. But as you know, we continue to get into the off season. I know it's football season, but a hot stove immediately turned up to 11 last night as the New York Mets traded Brandon Nimmo to the Texas Rangers for Marcus Semien. We're going to talk about what that can mean for the outfield market. There's a lot of murmurs. Michael Kay, the Yankees broadcaster on TV for Yes, discussed the Yankees being a team that should trade for Fernando Tatis Jr. We'll talk about Tatis, all of that and more right here on Fireside Yankees. Make sure you like and subscribe. Go to Apple or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, for the audio version of this episode, and make sure to check out our social media channels, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and of course this YouTube page, EmpireSportsMedia.com, written coverage of the Yankees and New York sports teams. But Alex, let's just jump right into this and let's talk about Fernando Tatis Jr. First and foremost, how are you doing? And how do, when you hear the name Fernando Tatis Jr., do you think, oh, the Yankees are going to get him, or do you think, ah, that's fantasy land?
I'm doing pretty good. I mean, Shane Bowen's no longer on my team, so, you know, doing 100% better than what I was when I woke up. But, you know, when it comes to the Yankees and the market that's unfolding, some interesting developments. Obviously, like you mentioned, Brandon Nimmo going to the Rangers and Marcus Semien going to the Mets. It creates a big void in the Mets outfield, and they could be looking to go in and make some noise, whether it be Cody Bellinger or Kyle Tucker. And the Fernando Tatis, you know, kind of rumors, I don't even think it's really a rumor. I think it was just an idea presented by Kay, and people are like, oh, like, what would that look like? Like, how would that fit? Well, yeah, Fernando Tatis would be an unbelievable acquisition for the Yankees. Let's be very clear. He would be an athletic freak. He can do so many things for you defensively. He is going to hit a ton of home runs for you. Like, the short right portion, Yankee Stadium does not, it's a stand. It doesn't apply. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to hit home runs no matter where he is playing. So, yeah, would love to have Fernando Tatis, and his contract obviously is extremely attractive. It's not that bad long-term. And he's still only 26 years old, so, you know, his maturity issues in the past I think are behind him. I think he's kind of getting over the hump on those. Obviously, he's a cornerstone piece. Like, you build a team around a player like that. The Padres, you know, they're changing ownership potentially. They're losing some guys, Dylan Cease, Michael King. You know, they're definitely losing pieces. It definitely feels as though they're heading towards kind of, you know, regression, you could say, in a lot of ways. But I don't think that they're willing to sell the one player that draws seats, asses to seats. That's essentially what it is. Like, he is a business, you know, he is their business half the time. And I think that, you know, it would be a definitely a risky move to pull off something like that for them. But if you're the Yankees and if he was available, I think you absolutely have to try. I mean, he's that talented.
Yeah, and I think every team in Major League Baseball would at least ask, but we mentioned this first because we kind of want to kill your hopes and dreams off rip. That's really it. What I'm hearing here at Empire Sports Media and Fireside Yankees is that the Padres are not even entertaining that. Multiple people linked and connected to the Padres organization with understanding of their thinking, saying absolutely not a chance. Tatis, too much of a draw, as Alex mentioned, too good of a player. He's the best contract on that roster. When you think about offloading salaries, why are you going to offload one of your best salaries? Well, you still have a realistic chance of winning games. Like, you are a good offseason away from potentially winning, you know, 90, 91, 92 games and getting back into the postseason. Anything can happen. And for the Padres, they are a organization that always finds a way to compete. AJ Preller, very aggressive GM. So while he's aggressive and sort of crazy, to kind of use the right term to use for him is he's crazy. I don't think he's crazy enough to trade his best player with a pretty, you know, it's a good contract. Like, that's the whole appeal. The reason people are like, I want Tatis and not, I want Machado, I want Bogarts, I want Darvish, I want Musgrove, is because Tatis is their best contract. He's their best player. So I think it's a ludicrous idea. But I want to kind of kill that then and there. But Alex, there was another shakeup in the outfield market with Brandon Nimmo going to the Texas Rangers for Marcus Semien. Now, you might go, this is the Yankees podcast, why do the Mets matter here? Well, it was kind of reported by John Heyman, and I believe Pat Ragazzo as well, that the Mets would have interest in Cody Bellinger. And at first it was, well, where? He's going to play center field? Their top prospect is center fielder. That doesn't really make sense. Now, there is some logic to it, because Brandon Nimmo is gone. The team will need a left fielder or a center fielder. more likely a center fielder than a left fielder, and Bellinger can play that position. Alex, what is your worry level on a scale of 1 to 10 that the New York Mets will threaten the Yankees for Cody Bellinger?
I mean, my just looking at what happened last year with Soto, I have to say it's about a 7. You know, you just don't know with the Mets. They could go after any of these top guys. You know, you look at Kyle Tucker, maybe that's out of their price range in terms of they don't want to allocate billions to the outfield. But Bellinger is going to get you, is going to, what, 150 mil over 5-6 years? And then you have Tucker who's going to get more like 300 plus. So a much different situation. Like you kind of said on Twitter, Bellinger's swing doesn't necessarily fit Citi Field. You know, the short right porch was his best friend for a reason. But his defensive versatility is an absolute asset. He can play first, he can play left, he can play right, he can be center. He can, wherever you need him, Bellinger's going to play a competent level, if not above average. And then, you know, offensively, he's a good contact hitter too. He hit .272 last year. So, I looked into it on Savant, and I think 29 home runs in Yankee Stadium, 25 in Citi Field. So it is a drop-off, but it's not like to a degree that would warrant like avoiding him in free agency. Now, obviously, that it, this conversation intends, you know, the Mets to spend more money on their outfield. Like you said, their top prospect isn't a center fielder. So if you kind of look at what the Mets should do and what they want to do, it might be different things. I could see them going and bringing like Harrison Bader back, and then like having their top outfield prospect eventually like compete, assume that role. But Bader, good right-handed bat, elite defender. They have one. It really covers up. I mean, having that elite center fielder really covers up Juan Soto's problems in right, because he had some really bad problems last year. So you know, if I'm the Yankees, I'm worried because the Mets have unlimited money. Absolutely. But I still think I'm the favorite for Cody Bellinger because we know what we're getting. He's a perfect fit in Yankee Stadium. And I think he liked being a Yankee. I think he does want to go back, but he wants the money to make sense too. So I'm about a 7 just because of the money aspect. But I do think under the hood, like, the Yankees are still the favorites there.
Yeah, and where I sit with Cody Bellinger and the New York Mets, and I'm going to get a little crazy here, Alex. Good. I'm glad the Mets are going to be in, because the Yankees should be focused on the top of the market first. The best of the best. They don't need it. The Yankees do not need a center fielder, Alex. The Yankees need a corner outfielder. It does not matter what position they play. I know people are going to say, well, Kyle Tucker's a right fielder. Guys, Aaron Judge played center field for the Yankees. You just watched Jason Dominguez play left field for the Yankees. If you don't think Kyle Tucker, who played right field in Wrigley and right field in Houston, can't play left field in Yankee Stadium, I think you're crazy. And if his market is as bad as it looks like it's going to be, which is, you know, maybe the Blue Jays, maybe the Mets, Dodgers more in the periphery, not a lot of other teams really involved. If Bellinger's market gets crazy and Tucker's market's like, hey, he's going to sign like a $350 million contract over 10 years, yeah, I'm signing Tucker. I think that where the Yankees sit right now is interesting. This could be either the worst thing that could happen to them or one of the best things that can happen to them, in the sense that if Kyle Tucker and Cody Bellinger, their annual average salaries sit between $8 to $9 million separated in favor of Tucker, the projection models would tell you you should sign Kyle Tucker, because Kyle Tucker is going to be about a win better than Cody Bellinger in terms of war. And in terms of dollars per war, you pay about $8 to $11 million, $8 million the lower end of that estimate, $11 million the higher end of that estimate. So that would tell you, you should pay for the extra win. It's worth it at $8 to $9 million. Now, there is that worry that you're not really that in on Tucker. You're really focused on Bellinger, and the Mets steal Bellinger from you, and you kind of have your tail in between your legs. But I also think the other advantage of bringing back Grisham is that you do not need to hand out a stupid contract to bring back Bellinger. I would like to use the Nimmo trade as a warning for Yankee fans. Brandon Nimmo was a fan favorite. Homegrown, born and bred a New York Met, supposed to be there the rest of his career. One of the first things he said when he signed his that deal was, I'm so happy knowing I'm going to put this uniform on and never take it off. 3 years into that deal, gone. Going into 2023, what type of year did he have? 5.5 wins above replacement, 132 WRC+, plus, .367 on base percentage. He was a better player than Cody Bellinger was entering his walk year and could play center field at a pretty solid level. Year one, hey, it's pretty good, 4.2 war, but you're like, I don't know if he can play center field anymore. It was a pretty sharp decline, which some of the numbers had indicated he was going to start declining defensively out there. Then he started getting slower. He, 2024, couldn't play center field, was a left fielder, had the worst offensive year of his career since his 2016 year, which is the first year in the big leagues. And then 2025, not a great year, gets traded. The Mets go, this contract's underwater. We're trading you for a 36-year-old second baseman. It's not the kind of thing you do when you believe in the player. Very quickly, these B players can become not great. And I would say Nimmo, going into his free agency, was a better baseball player than Bellinger. And I don't think that was even close either. I think Bellinger is a free agent, and Nimmo's a free agent. I think Nimmo was the better free agent. He was a year younger, all those kinds of advantages that go for him. So, Alex, I say it all to say, the Yankees should not offer a stupid contract to Bellinger just because the Mets might go after him. And the Yankees shouldn't even be a, okay, Bellinger first, then maybe Tucker. No, it's Tucker number one. That should be the board. Tucker number one. We need a corner outfielder. Tucker's the best in the market. Brian Cashman was talking about how he was talking to his agent at the Covenant House sleepout event. Let's go get the guy. Let's go get the guy, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll add in this. You're paying Trent Grisham $22 million this season, right? Mm-hmm. But it's only a one-year deal. So if you pay Kyle Tucker, you can keep those salary hits lower the first 2 years or so. DJ LeMahieu's money comes off the books after next season. Grisham's money comes off the books after next season. Stan has a $10 million buyout in 2028. Garrett Cole's deal comes due in 2028 as well, I believe. So the Yankees have a lot of money coming off the books long-term. I'm not really concerned about that in terms of affording Kyle Tucker. At the same time, you need that insurance for Judge. Like, you need that level of competency. And then in center field long-term, you have Spencer Jones, who will get active next year. You still got Jason Dominguez. Like, you may have a homegrown piece to play center long-term that you don't have to pay $22 million to in Grisham. And by the way, Grisham's defense, no bueno. It's not good in center field anymore. So, Ryan, let me ask you this. Looking at the outfield right now, obviously Grisham's advanced stats suggest he had negative 10 DRS last or something like that. Like, something crazy, maybe negative 11. What do you kind of see with that? Are you concerned about his defense in center field? And if so, what are you going to do with that position?
So with Grisham in center field, I think he's going to be more of an average defender next year. If you look at his fielding run value, which I think is more accurate than defensive run saved for outfielders, that's just my perception of the metric. Not that DRS is completely useless. It is an important metric to look at, but I prefer fielding run value. That's just kind of my go-to metric. Again, that's just me. His fielding run value before his hamstring injury was zero. And then after, it was negative three. The defensive runs saved were solid, average, before the hamstring injury, slightly below, if anything. Then were really bad after. I think that hamstring injury hurt him in season. He didn't really rest from it. He kept playing through it. I think that if he can stay healthier this year and not have that hamstring issue pop up in season again, he should be a decent enough defensive center fielder. I never watched Trent Grisham play center field and felt like I wanted to gouge my eyes out. I just felt like, okay, the defensive center field is a reason to not want to give him a multi-year contract. And then when you look at left field, I mean, yes, Kyle Tucker, clearly a worse defender than Bellinger, and that could matter in this. At the end of the day, right, if Tucker gets $420 million and Bellinger gets, $160 over 6 years, the Yankees pay, let's say, $27 million for Bellinger per year and another team paying $42 million for Tucker, yeah, I understand going, I don't think that Kyle Tucker is about two wins better than Cody Bellinger. That's fair. That's a fair evaluation to make if you're an organization, but if it's within one win, yeah, I'm willing to have a worse outfield defense and be like slightly below average, but have that much firepower. I'm going to point to the Dodgers. They just went back to back for World Series champions. Again, back to back World Series champions haven't been done since the Yankees in 1999 to 2000. Look at their outfield defense. It's not like their outfield defense was particularly incredible over that stretch. Not to say that you need to be a bad outfield defensively to be a quality contender, but zero defensive runs saved, negative 13 fielding run value, and negative 12 fielding run value. They were a bottom half of the league defense across that two-year window. So for me, at least, Alex, like, it just doesn't matter if they're a not great outfield defense as long as they hit. Right, you think about the construction of this lineup: Grisham, Tucker, Judge, Rice, Stanton, Chisholm. That is too valuable. That is too valuable for me to look at the defense and go, well, they're not a great outfield unit. That's fine. That's cool. Fine. I have a 5-win left fielder, and a guy who's gonna have a 140 OPS plus, maybe a 150, and he's hitting in front of my generational, once in a lifetime GOAT level MVP player. I think consistency matters with role players or your number two. I'm not trying to make the comparison that they are this pairing, but Michael Jordan was like, he might have peaked higher than anybody in NBA history. I think that is I'm a LeBron guy, but Jordan peaked higher than anybody in NBA history. And he had the most consistent number two you could ask for in Scottie Pippen. Aaron Judge may be peaking higher than any right-handed hitter we've ever seen. Ever. We may never see somebody do what he's done. He needs his consistent Scottie Pippen. Only Cody Bellinger, Juan Soto, and DJ LeMahieu have ever had years with 5 wins above replacement or more on either Baseball Reference or Fangraphs for the New York Yankees on the position player side. What they do those years? ALCS, ALDS exit, World Series appearance. The 25 team, probably the best team to not get to the ALCS in this Judge era, in my opinion. The 19 team ran into a buzzsaw, an all-time great Astros team. They won 106 games. And the 24 team obviously went to the World Series. So when you have that Robin next to Batman, whew, Yankees are pretty freaking good, man. They're pretty freaking good.
They absolutely are. And you need to have that insurance policy for not even just insurance. You need to have that 1-2 punch. Obviously, Tucker, low strikeout rates. Bellinger, low strikeout rates. I think, and you know, well, let's talk about one other storyline that you actually, you know, concocted at the event with Brian Cashman, and you asked him like, what are the strengths and weaknesses? Like, what are you doing here? And he said the bottom half of the order needs more contact, less strikeouts. So that's an interesting storyline to follow, right? You have Austin Wells, you have Anthony Volpe, and you have Ryan McMahon. Those three guys strike out a hell of a lot. So, Ryan, I'll ask you this. What are you doing? And it's not like Jose Caballero is much better in that regard. He still has a 27%+ strikeout rate, too. What do you think the Yankees are going to do to address that? Because it does sound to me like they want to bring in a player who does have lower strikeout rates and does get on base more frequently and at least put the ball in play, because they need someone to break that up. I don't think they're changing out Austin Wells. And I think that Ryan McMahon's under contract for the next 2 years. So the question becomes, is it a platoon at third base that brings more contact, or is it someone to bring in to compete with Anthony Volpe? And at this point right now, I'm going to say it like I do every freaking year. I would be moving the world to go get Brendan Donovan to compete at shortstop. I know he's not traditionally a shortstop. I would sacrifice the defensive shortcomings just because of his offensive profile and what he would bring to this team. He's not a bottom half of the order batter in any case, but like, that's just a move I'd be making. And then you have insurance for second base if Jazz Chisholm walks in free agency. Like, curious idea, but you know, I know some people don't like Brendan Donovan. What would you do to address those strikeout problems?
Well, the first thing I'd like to note is general manager Brian Cashman also added that internal development could be part of that. So my perception of this situation is that he believes that Anthony Volpe can strike out less. If you look at Volpe, Wells, McMahon, which, let's be honest, that's what he's talking about. He didn't name anybody, but bottom of the order. You mentioned internal development. That's clearly talking about Volpe and Wells. Too many strikeouts. Clearly, McMahon's part of that conversation. He had the highest strikeout rate on the team, I believe. So those are the three guys he's very obviously talking about. All three of them saw increases in their strikeout rate from 2024 to 2025. In the case of Volpe, I believe that he needs to make better swing decisions, as does Austin Wells. For Austin Wells, he went from a guy who was like known for patience to chasing at every single slider out of the zone. I think you can strike out less by making better swing decisions. And let's kind of just break this down from a simple baseball standpoint, right? If you're the New York Yankees, or if you're a hitter, right? If you're a hitter, what is easier to do? Make contact on a pitch that's out of the zone or in the zone. Very easy, in zone. Your in-zone contact rates will always be higher than your out-of-zone contact rates. So Austin Wells actually made more contact in zone this year, 85.1% compared to 83.9% in 2024. If he can improve his chase rate again, get it back down to 26.4%, then we're looking at a guy who, okay, making it contact in zone, we're good there. Not chasing those bad pitches that you're never going to make contact with. That's good. And the power was there. I think Austin Wells is easily the most fixable of this group. He projects to be an above average hitter next year. I think he will be. I think he's very I'm very confident saying he's going to hit 20 home runs and have an on-base percentage of like 320, 330, somewhere in that range. And that's an above average hitter. For Ryan McMahon, going from playing in Coors and then having to leave Coors and play at a different ballpark when you're on the road and the ball moves differently, I think just seeing the ball the same in 162 games could help him a lot. And the Yankees, I think, are a better organization than the Rockies. So when it comes to player development, I trust them to do the right job. And with Ryan McMahon, I think McMahon's a very talented hitter as well. He saw his whiff rate increase by 5% from 2024 to 2025. So there's an improvement to be had there. Overall, Alex, like, I think at shortstop, I'd like to bring in some competition if possible, because I would like Caballero to be the platoon partner for McMahon. Caballero hits lefties, doesn't hit righties. I want Caballero to play in place of McMahon. As well, Cabrera cannot platoon with McMahon. He's not good against left-handed pitching. So would it be nice? Yes. Do I think they're going to end up bringing in a shortstop? My answer is probably no, at least not one who's going to compete with Volpe at a serious level, because that is expensive on the market. And if they want to do that, I mean, they believe in Volpe. They believe in Volpe to be a good glove. I've never gotten the sense from the Yankees that this past year was a serious, like, oh man, we're moving him this offseason. I've always got the perception that it just made this upcoming season more important, more urgent. And that urgency is also stemmed from how close he is to hitting free agency. This is going to like give you a little bit of a scare, Alex, because I feel like I remember when you and I did the episode talking about Volpe coming up. After this year, it's two more years till free agency. So he's got 3 years left on his deal. Three arbitration years. So every year that ticks off, he becomes more expensive. And every year it becomes more expensive, you kind of expect an improvement in play. So the cheap, hey, he's a cheap defensive shortstop thing is going to start going away in the next few years. So I'm just curious to see how it changes if he has a underwhelming 2026 season. That's why I think the conversation becomes more interesting. But Alex, is there someone outside of Donovan that you'd be considered to bring, that you would consider bringing in?
It's hard to say. I mean, listen, I don't think many people are sitting here thinking I trust Volpe to take steps in the right direction. Like we're 3 years in. He's a below average offensive player. That labrum injury, I'll throw him a bone with that one. I do think the labrum injury did significantly impact his defensive abilities, but he also like was off mentally though. I remember like we saw him live a couple times and he was not attacking the ball. Like he was sitting back waiting for the ball to get to him. It wasn't his usual aggressive mentality. So there was the injury hurt, but I also think he was playing kind of weak. I think he was playing conservative defense, and that really hurt him because he needs to be an offensive defender in a way, an aggressive defender. So offensively though, yeah, he'll hit 15 home runs for you per season, but you're gonna get like a month of bad play in the same time. Like he's not gonna get on base, he's gonna hit ground balls, he's gonna strike out a ton, his swing decisions are bad, his fundamentals change every season multiple times. Like you watch Aaron Judge, his approach every single at-bat is exactly the same. His swing is exactly the same. His tendencies, his mechanics are exactly the same. Anthony Volpe's swing changes every time he goes up to bat. Like, every single time, his hips are closed, his hips are open, his hands are this, his hands are that. His weight distribution, everything is off all the time. He has literally no consistency when it comes to his actual swing. That's where he needs to change. He has to come to a decision, this is the swing that I am going to be using the entire season, and I am not changing it. Right. Even if you go through bad spells, because he's changing it and still going through bad spells. So you need to have consistency. Whatever is going to put him in the best spot to succeed, just commit to it. I think they're going to give him this upcoming season, Ryan, but I think this will probably be the last year that they'll give him that ability to really break out. If he doesn't break out, we might see a changing of the guard, because the truth of the matter is he does not have enough power to hit home runs naturally. He has to sell out for power, which is why I think sometimes that contact takes a significant step in the wrong direction, because his game has to change. George Lombard Jr. is knocking on that freaking door, man. Like this spring training, he's going to play and he's going to flash that glove, and everyone's going to say to themselves, he's probably the guy in the future. You know, he's probably our long-term shortstop, if not third base. Who knows? It depends how things unfold, but 2027 rolls around, Ryan, George Lombard Jr. is going to be competing for a starting job in that infield, and it's probably going to be at shortstop.
Yeah, and to kind of talk a little bit about Volpe and the process at the plate, the expected OPS was not good this past year. So, you know, unlike a guy like a Ryan McMahon, and I know that in the case of Austin Wells, his expected OPS wasn't great either, but you know, I think that the career expected OPS is pretty good, so I would bank on him being a better player next year. Volpe had a 682 expected OPS. His OPS was 663. So even if he performs up to that 680 mark, is that good enough with the defense and base running he provided last year? No. So even if he plays to his expected numbers, he wasn't going to be a very good or very productive player. The question comes with defense for Volpe. How good are you as a defender? And can there be any offensive strides? I just find Anthony Volpe to be this player who, quite frankly, doesn't have the kind of like tools, as you mentioned, to where you're like, oh wow, the talent kind of pops. No, it doesn't. The talent does not pop. He relies on, as you mentioned, hey, I need to have the right bat path, the right spray angles. I mean, it's a really rough watch sometimes. It's very much a player who is inconsistent, has never had an on-base percentage above 300. He can't hit for average. He doesn't consistently hit for power. It's a very hard watch offensively, and if the defense is not there, it is going to be a tough year and a tough argument for him to be the starting shortstop. Now, as the Yankee roster is built out, I think that we will find that the shortstop position is just naturally going to be their biggest weakness, even at third. I know McMahon is a weak hitting third baseman, but better expected numbers can platoon. You can play him against righties and play Caballero against lefties and have at least a passable third base offensive room. For Volpe, it's so reliant on defense. The defense is so inconsistent year to year. It's very shaky. It's an up and down thing. Defense is not as sticky as offense. So when we talk about like who you'd rather have long term, and if you have like a 3 WAR player who's a 120 OPS plus hitter and a 3 WAR player who's a 100 OPS plus hitter, you rely on the 120 guy to consistently get to that 3 WAR mark, because again, offense is more sticky, more predictable than defense is. Very hard to predict defense. Volpe was a plus defender in 23 and 24 after, as a prospect, not really being considered a shortstop, and then in 25 it cratered. Obviously injuries played a role in that. We'll see how much of a role it played at that, but very hard to project defense. So Alex, I think he's kind of on the chopping block this upcoming year. And I think this is, but again, I think he'll enter the year with, he's not going to be not the starting shortstop when he's healthy. He's going to start. It's just a question of the leash and what does next year look like. So curious to see how that goes. Again, I think the outfield, like, that's got to be the priority. But I did want to talk about one more thing. And it was a quote that was dropped like maybe 5 minutes before we were going out there and getting ready to record and all that. We kind of had the preparation for what we're going to talk about. And then Tatsuya Imai made a comment that I find fascinating, Alex. I find this fascinating. On the idea of playing with the Dodgers, Imai had this to say: "I want to take them down. I think beating a team like that and becoming world champions would be the most valuable thing in my life." So as a talent, I love Tatsuya Imai. I think he's a talented pitcher, and the Yankees should pursue him because of the talent. I think this quote has me all in. Alex, what is your immediate reaction to that quote, and what do you think it means for the Yankees?
Well, I can tell you one thing. The Yankees are being rumored by pretty much everybody to be in the starting pitching market. They either are going to trade for somebody or they're going to sign somebody. I would go and get Imai just because you need to get influence back in the international market. The Yankees have just been too out of it for so long since Tanaka. Like, we haven't had that big Japanese talent to really convince those pieces to come here, like the Roki Sasakis of the world. Like, maybe if you have Imai, you have a better chance. Who knows? But the truth of the matter is, you know, he's a talented pitcher. Yeah, he's small. What is he, like 5-something? But, you know, people make fun of him for being smaller. But the guy's got nasty pitches. Like, he's a nasty pitcher. And, you know, you get back into that market, you take a chance here, you have some of the best pitching development in the world. You take that chance. And his mentality is exactly what you want: to beat the hell out of the Dodgers, beat the hell out of these big front-running teams. And I think the Yankees, with that being said, you know, could be, who knows, maybe he wants to go to the Giants because it's on the West Coast. Maybe he wants to go to a different West Coast team. But if he doesn't care about that, the Yankees are the team you want to join. Them or the Mets, probably, honestly. The Mets show up again in the conversation. But they do, they're trying to trade Kodai Senga as well right now. So, you know, definitely an interesting situation unfolding. But yeah, I think the Yankees are going to make a starting pitching acquisition. I would like them to take a chance on a guy like this. He's a big what-if unknown, but he's got nasty stuff. And I do think that his stuff will play. And just that mentality alone has got me bought in for sure.
I'm going to delve into a conversation I usually don't dip my toes into, and that is in regard to makeup and character and what you bring to the table off the field. When we talk about starting pitchers, I think part of what made Cam Schlittler so excellent in the postseason is his makeup. I think he's very much a competitor. He lives for this. He loves it. Imai lives for it, and he loves it. And I think that is going to be something that translates to New York well. And if you want to get into the Japanese market and you want to not make this a near 20-year drought, I think Imai is the guy. And if you want to make a statement to the rest of baseball that you're here and that you're the New York Yankees and that you are the place to be, then you should go get Tatsuya Imai and then go get Kyle Tucker, right? That's what you should do. Let me make a couple of things abundantly clear about the Yankees. They are an organization that people want to play for. The GM, Brian Cashman, is very respected across the league. The manager, Aaron Boone, is very respected across the league. Regardless of what you think as a fan, whether you hate these guys, whether you think people have the wool pulled over their eyes, that is how the league perceives them. They love Cashman and they love Boone. Players love playing with Aaron Judge, who is kind of a shield, absorbs all of the media attention when things are going wrong. He could go 2-for-3, the team could score 8 runs, and they still lose because the pitching staff got rocked. And he will sit up there and talk to the media and say, "We need to be better. We need to pitch better. We need to go out there and support our guys better." Aaron Judge is the ultimate captain, the ultimate leader. It's why Juan Soto enjoyed playing here as much as he did, even though he ended up leaving. He very much loved playing for Aaron Judge and with Aaron Judge. Now, in regard to Kyle Tucker and Cody Bellinger and all these guys, the place to play in New York, it might seem like, because I said all those things, I'm going to say because the place to play in New York is the Yankees. If you took a poll across the league, it'd be more split than I think the Yankee fan is comfortable with. It'd be way more split on players and where they think they have the best chance of winning. Juan Soto believed he had the best chance of winning with the Mets. That's not just something he said for publicity. He said it and he felt it. And that is the internal perception that Soto and his camp had. That's what Boris believed, and that was part of their thinking. For the Yankees, you need to kind of dispel that narrative that you're not the place to play. You know, you show everyone that it's the Bronx where you should go play in New York and go win. It's by signing Imai. It's by signing Tucker. Because the Mets, they're shaking things up. They're going to have a big winter. I don't know what they're going to do, but they're going to have a big winter. A year after signing Juan Soto. If you want to go play in the West Coast, you play for the Dodgers. If you want to play in the East Coast, there's not really like that one team that stands out, right? If you go West, it's the Dodgers. If you go East, it's the Yankees, Phillies, Mets, maybe the Red Sox. Blue Jays now up north. But the Yankees aren't that premier destined. They're one of the big market teams. They're not the big market team. This is an opportunity to become the big market team again. You want to change how people perceive you? You want Juan Soto's perception of you to not be the league-wide perception? You've got to do something about it. When you want people to like you, you have to be a good person. You have to be someone who can be liked. You can't just demand and hope that who you were before and what you did before is going to keep you liked. You got to update your resumes. If you're going out and getting a job and you say, well, I was once the CEO of this company about 20 years ago. I haven't really done anything since. And this guy's like, yeah, I was this hotshot CEO. I've been a top CEO the last 4 or 5 years. Recency matters. Updating your resume matters. You can't coast off 2009 for that long. You can't coast off of we used to be the big bad spenders. You're not the big bad spenders now. It's the Mets and the Dodgers. You go get Imai and Tucker, though, whew, changes the whole perception, doesn't it, Alex? And you look at that 2026 Yankees team, dangerous, best team in the American League, not even close. Don't tell me, well, the Blue Jays could do this and that. No. You get Tucker and Imai, nothing they can do about it. Maybe they can, yep. Unless they trade for Tatis, Skeen, Skubal. They don't do that. No, they're not better than us. So
yeah, and I'll tell you this. Yeah. You want to know what it costs to get Imai and Kyle Tucker? Just money. Just money. Right,
I just mean, of course, no qualifying offer,
it's no draft money, picks, but yeah, it's just money, no draft picks, and no prospects. So that still opens up the idea of saying if you're like, I'm getting Imai and I'm getting Tucker, or even if you end up bringing back Bellinger, that shouldn't stop the Yankees from making additional moves. You know, trading for a bullpen arm, bringing in another solid infielder that can help. You know, we like Caballero, obviously. Oswaldo Cabrera signed his deal, $1.2 million, I believe. So, like, they have plenty of utility. Ben Rice is starting at first base next year. They need another backup catcher, I guess you could say. I mean, they could put Ben Rice as the backup catcher / first baseman. Maybe that's the role they end up using him in long term. But, you know, just looking at the situation at hand, they have enough to do a lot. And I don't think that Cashman's going to be held to the $300 million luxury tax threshold, like, on the dot. I've been reading reports and seeing things saying that he might be able to push $20 million over that. If the Yankees have another $60, $70 million to go before Hal Steinbrenner, you know, puts a cork in it, Imai and Tucker should be Yankees, right? That's what that money equals.
And again, Alex, you think about what it means for the Yankees, right? Again, we talk about making a statement. The Mets are going to make a statement this winter. The Dodgers, I mean, they've made their statement. They're back-to-back World Series champions. They don't have to. They could do nothing. Nothing. Where will players say their best chance to win is? Dodgers. Their resume's there. No one can compete with that. The Mets have shown financially, hey, if you want to win, you come here. Because we're going to spend on you, and then we're going to spend on all your buddies, and you're go play with all your rich buddies on the New York Mets. You got to make sure they're still that team. So, you know, you want to run it back with Bellinger and, you know, bring in a solid starting pitcher like a Chris Bassett on 1 year. Yeah, you'll be a good team. You'll win 90-plus games probably. You'll be good. There's no denying that. This is a good team. I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm saying as they're not a good baseball team. But we've seen a lot of good Yankee teams. The Yankees have had, outside of 2023, and 2021 was not a good team. A lot of good teams. A lot of really, some really good teams. Some 100-win teams. But never the best team. No, never the best team. They were never the best team in baseball. Never with Aaron Judge. Not in 17, not in 18, not in 19, not in 20, 21, 22, whatever you want to go. Never the best team. Maybe it's time the Yankees get back in the business of being the best team in baseball. Last time they had an offseason like that was 09. And who, baby? And the closest they got to doing it was Yamamoto and Soto. And had they gotten Yamamoto, 2024 World Series champions. How's that? Isn't that interesting? And you know, the offseason Nimmo signed, you know who's the top outfield free agent on that market? It's Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge's return on value. Nimmo has not. Correa was another top guy who signed. Is he really worth that contract so far? Answer's no. So, I'm just saying, guys, I'm just saying. All these, but he's good, and you can get him for less money than the top guy. You could save some money and spread the wealth. Doesn't work. Imagine if the Yankees were like, no, we can sign Strasburg and another pitcher. Imagine if, I don't know, the Mets were like, hey, we can sign Corbin Burns instead of Juan Soto. That would have gone swimmingly. Imagine if the Yankees said, hey, we'll spend less on Burns instead of getting freed. That would work beautifully for them, wouldn't have. You go get the best guy. It always works out. You go get the top guys. You go out and you look at the top of the market and you go him, him, and him. I want all of them. And you bring him in and you form an incredible team. I think about that. I was tossing and turning last night thinking about the Grisham, Tucker, Judge, Rice, Stanton, Chisholm stack.
Nasty.
It's unbelievable. That's just crazy good. It's unfair, Alex. Imai in that rotation. Cole Fried, Rodon Schlittler. Just an embarrassment of riches. That's asshole shit. That's being an asshole.
They have it, dude. The cool thing about it is like, you know, let's take a quote from Aaron Boone and use it against him. It's all right in front of them. They could go out and do this. They could go out and get Tucker. The money's going to be coming off the books from so many players long term. Cole, you know, obviously Stanton, McMahon's contract. Like, there's lots of money coming off the books. DJ LeMahieu, $50 million this upcoming year.
And you're bringing in a dog.
You're bringing in a guy who is one of the most consistent offensive performers in the sport, and in a down year had a 136 WRC+. A down year, he was 36% above average. That, by the way, guys, what is that? 11% better than what Bellinger gave us last year? 11% better than Bellinger, and he was that was a down year for him. Like, yes, the defense is not going to be as good, but the offense is going to be consistently great. And Bellinger just came off a year where he had his best defensive year in like 6-7 seasons and one of his best offensive years in his career. He is historically volatile. I really like Bellinger, don't get me wrong, and I'm okay with them bringing him back. I'm totally fine with that. But the one thing that you risk with Bellinger is the consistency factor. He is volatile. Like, we got a really good season out of him, but he is historically volatile. Kyle Tucker is not. He is historically a freaking monster and a weapon in any lineup. So that's the risk you run when you don't go for the top guy. The second guy, usually you're going to have to pay, but he's going to be volatile. He's going to be a little bit more risky. That top guy, like you said, usually works out because those top guys play freaking insane ball, provide insane production every year, year in and year out. That's what you're paying for.
Do you know how many guys, because we talk about like 136 WRC plus down year, there are 9 Yankee qualified Yankee seasons where a hitter has put up a WRC plus above 136. That's during the Judge era, so 17 to 2025. Two of them are COVID years, DJ LeMahieu and Luke Voit in 2020. Five of them are Aaron Judge that are better than 136 of the 9. So 5 are Aaron Judge, 2 are COVID years. One is 2024 Juan Soto, and the other is 2021 Giancarlo Stanton. That's it, right? You have COVID years, Stanton, Soto, and Judge. So Tucker would immediately be one of the best teammates that he's ever had, mm-hmm. right? And again, you know, we talk about like Tucker, like he's awesome, he's great, we get that. But on the other side, we talk about Imai, right? Like, this guy's a dog. This dude's a dog. The first things he said to the media after he got posted, I don't want to be a Dodger. You can join him, celebrate him. I want to be the best pitcher in the world. He had the balls to say, you know, I didn't really want to go to MLB. And then, like, dude, these guys just don't try to hit home runs off me. They just try to foul everything. They can't hit home runs off me. They can't. I want to be challenged. These dudes in Japan don't challenge me. They're little brothers. They're my little brothers. They're little bro. I'm big bro. I'm the big dog. I'm hunting. I'm big game hunting. There's no other big dogs with me. He's the guy. That's what he's saying. So I like that kind of person being in the locker room, being in the clubhouse. You've got Cole. Cole is, I know he's cleaned up a little bit in terms of, like, he's a little more calm and chill. Now, that guy's crazy. I love it. He's psychotic. There's something wrong with Gerrit Cole. There's something wrong with – I mean, there's something wrong with Cam Schnitzler in a good way. I'm saying this all in a positive way. Rodon's got a little crazy to him. Freed doesn't have crazy to him, but he's, like, weirdly quiet and – like, Freed kind of scares me in the sense of he's so emotionless. It's a little bit scary. Like, if I was a hitter and I just saw the same stare from pitch one to pitch 100, regardless of the outcome, that would kind of petrify me a little bit. Point is, you add you're adding a dog to your rotation on top of your rotation of dogs, and you're adding the best player on the market to your lineup that finished first in runs scored last year, and you're running back the framework with Tucker instead of Ellinger. You're going to have the best team in the American League by far.
And you have a full year of Schlittler, like you mentioned. Full year of Schlittler, and you still have all your exciting young prospects. Spencer Jones could be a star. George Lombard Jr. could be a Gold Glover today if he joined the MLB. You know, you have Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, who you absolutely love. Carlos LaGrange, who hits triple digits in your bullpen, you know, in the minors right now. So, like, you know, this team has so much talent. And you add those two pieces, you say, you know what, screw it. Judge is 33. We need to go balls to the wall now, or we're running the risk of potentially missing that window of contention. You do it right now. This is it. There is no waiting until next year, because next year, the whole CBA thing, what happens then? What happens if the season starts? What happens if the season doesn't happen? And then Judge is coming back to the league, and he's 35, 36. You know, what happens if he doesn't play a whole season and father time is catching up? It's now or never for the Yankees. It's now or never.
Do you want the ages of everyone in the lineup if they were to – so at the start of the 2027 season, so this is 2 years ahead – Ben Rice would be entering his age 28 season. Aaron Judge would be entering his age 35 season. After the lockout. So it's 3 years. Sorry. Sorry. If they have a lockout year, Ben Rice is 29. Aaron Judge is 36. Giancarlo Stanton is off the team. Jazz Chisholm's off the team. Trent Grisham's off the team. McMahon is off the team. Wells is 29. Dominguez is 25.
Cole is 40.
Cole is 1 year away from free agency. Rodon is 1 year away from free agency, and they're old as hell. Freed would be a 33-year-old, 34-year-old, somewhere in that range. Like, guys, this would be a roster where all of the top guys that you project in terms of wins and replacement, OPS, home runs, either relics or not on the team. Mm-hmm. Not on the team. Grisham, Stanton, Chisholm, McMahon, not on the team. That's four of your five starters, not on the team. That would be Volpe's walk year. That'd be Wells' walk year. Think about that.
Yeah.
That's it. It's over. It's over. Right then and there, it's unless you have an incredible wave of guys come through your system where you make some unbelievable trades and get incredible market value, whatever it may be, it's over. Over. O-V-E-R. Warren is 30. Heal is 30. Freed is 33, 34. Cole's a relic. Dude, Cole's not going to lift his arm above his freaking shoulder. And again, he and Rodon will be walk year guys. Walk year, not core pieces. Walk year. Now is the time. Now is the time. This might be your only year left going out and being able to do it. And even if you play a shortened seasons are not good for your regular season. Because we've seen the Yankees. They can have 50 bad games, 60 bad games, 70 bad games, and miss the freaking postseason. Baseball's a random sport. This is your last true chance. Oh, don't even get me started with the bullpen. Bednar's a free agent. Doval, Cruz, Hill. I mean, Hill and Cruz are ancient at that point. Bird's probably gone. Yarbrough is ancient. Like, Schmidt isn't on the team. Like, dude, everyone's gone. Or old. This is your last chance, potentially. You cannot control the CBA. You can't control the lockout. You've got to go for it. It's got to be your top guys. You've got to go out and spend. And if you got to spend $330, $340 million to accomplish your goal, Hal, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. You just have to do it. This might be it. If we don't play baseball in 2027, this is it. When you watch this postseason, if they get there, when you watch this regular season, you may not feel, this is the first time I think for genuinely I'm going to feel this might be it. I've always felt like, okay, they're going to find a way to replenish and reload. Judge has always been there. That's why he's always been able to replenish and reload. Cole has usually been there. You've always had an ace. Those things aren't going to be, those things, baseball is cyclical. You're going to have cycles where you're not good. You have moments where you're not good. So, Alex, I don't know if you have any final thoughts, but like, this is the year potentially. This might be their last chance to be real World Series contenders.
Yeah. I mean, listen, like I said before, you sign Kyle Tucker to this $300 million, whatever, 7-8 year deal. You keep the salary hits lower in the first 2 years like they did with Max Fried, and then you get Imai, who's, you know, now you're probably looking at a situation where you're like, you've spent $40 million between those two players if you just, you know, restructure the contracts appropriately, and you might even have a little bit left over to go and get a bullpen arm. Like, there is no excuse at this point. There is no excuse. If Hal Steinbrenner does not tell Cashman to go get the pieces to win now, his legacy will be that of wasting Aaron Judge, will be that of wasting some of these core pieces that he went and spent God knows how much money to bring in to win a chip. You know, that will be his legacy. He wasted one of the best players of all time because he didn't want to spend the extra couple million dollars to do what was necessary in the moment. Hal Steinbrenner is not going homeless by spending the extra couple million dollars.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
He'll be just fine. The butlers will still show up on Monday morning. The clothes will be changed. The bed sheets will be made. Like, nothing changes for him. It's just about legacy, wins, losses, and championships. That's it.
We got dudes making $20 an hour talking about how we got to worry about the financials of a dude who makes $20 in like a microsecond.
Yep.
Like, what? Oh, we got to worry about his money. Dude, what? Dude, he's got, like, I love this analogy. To become a millionaire, you need to have $100,000 in 10 years. It's $100,000 a year, tax-free, no spending it. To become a billionaire at that rate, you'd have to do it for 10,000 years. 10,000! You are not, do not tell me, well, he can't spend 340. Yes, he can. Yes, he can. If he really wants to, yes, he can. Yes, he can. He absolutely can. For the right players, yes, he can. You'll create more revenue. You'll win more games. And you know what? Yep. You owe it to the fan base because no one charges more. No one pays more to be a fan of their team than the Yankee fan. No one does. No one pays more. We don't have parking. You have to pay for public transportation or to park in some overpriced lot somewhere near the stadium. It costs a ton of money to get into the building. It costs a ton of money in the postseason. It costs tons of money to do anything in New York City. Mm-hmm. So, yes, no one has it more. No one pays more to be a fan than the Yankee fan in terms of baseball. So no one should have a higher payroll than the Yankees in theory. But I'm going to give them at least the luxury of saying, hey, you don't have to have the highest payroll in baseball, but let's get to 330, 340. Let's do that. Let's go have a damn good offseason. But let me know what you guys think in the comment section below with the Yankees and where their spending could be at in 2026. Tucker, Bellinger, MI, all of that and more. Let us know what you guys think. You guys can like and subscribe, and that'll not only help the channel, but it's free. You guys don't have to pay anything for it, and you guys can support this page and all of that. Make sure you guys check out our social media platforms on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, this YouTube page. And finally, make sure to check out EmpireSportsMedia.com for written coverage on all of your favorite New York sports teams, because the Yankees are not the only show in town. The Giants just fired Shane Bowen. You know that we've got tons of articles online about that. Alex and Anthony, I know, are typing up a storm and talking about it on Fireside Giants. The Knicks, they're in season. I know that's going to cause a ton of stir. And the Mets as well. They've got stuff on there if you have Met fan friends or are a Met fan listening to this. So we appreciate you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out, everybody. Perfect.